Good evening. We are privileged tonight to hear from Becca Levi. She is the former Mrs. Utah 2005-2006. She is the author of 3 inspirational books, a paid motivational speaker, ambassador for the Statue of Responsibility, a proposed national monument, ambassador for Utah's First Lady's Power in You Youth Program. She is the owner of 3 businesses and founder of WomenSupportingWomen.biz and the mother of 4 and a devourer of chocolate. Please welcome Becca Levi.
Every time I hear that introduction, I still marvel that they are talking about me, except for the chocolate part. It makes me excited, because if you had known me 20 years ago, when I would come home from my management job and curl up in the fetal position sobbing and trying to squish behind the toilet because I couldn't handle life and all my insecurities. Or if you had known me 14 years ago when I was going through a divorce, or if you'd known me even 5 years ago before I lost 50 pounds and began seriously setting my intent to find my specific mission and purpose, you would be as surprised as I am to see what has happened since. I am now living a life and experiencing things that never would have happened if I hadn't surrendered to a power higher and greater than my own. Boy, it's always so fun to be able to speak to a group of women. Women have a way of finding humor in almost any situation. Like the woman who has 14 children, but hasn't a care in the world because she's been mistaking her Valium tablets for her birth control pills. Or who else but a woman can one minute be pulling out her hair and bawling, and then the next minute be consoling her best friend saying, "Don't worry, everything will be okay. Nothing is worth getting that upset over." Do you know what it's like to stock up on giant-sized bags of cereal only to find out that your kids don't like that kind anymore? And every woman should send this out in an email to all her friends. Warning, you know you need a new life when plucking chin hairs becomes a hobby. There is a lot of humor to be found in life if we'll just look for it. It was only a few years ago when I woke up one morning and I thought, I can't keep going on like this. I was traveling all over the country marketing our spa products. I was making more money than I'd ever expected to make, but I was still killing myself. I had no life. I had teenage kids still at home who were growing up way too fast. I didn't want to be gone working all the time and missing out on the last few years of their youth. But the reality was I still needed to make a living. So what was I to do? One morning, in pure, frazzled exhaustion, I got on my knees and seriously surrendered to finding out what my specific mission and purpose was. I'm telling you, that was a big leap of faith. What if I didn't have one? What if everyone having a mission and purpose was just all hype? Yet now that I am standing where I am, doing what I'm doing, and living the kind of life I live, and watching others do the same, I feel like shouting, "Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, and everyone has a mission and purpose." I should mention, however, you still have to wrap and buy your own presents. But I can stand here and tell you without a shadow of a doubt that everyone was born for greatness. Tonight I'm going to share with you part of my story, because it proves that everyone can make a difference and accomplish great things if they're just given the tools and the support they need to believe in themselves. It doesn't matter where you come from, what you've been through, how broken you think you are. It doesn't matter if you have the right education, background, or image. You are capable of so much more than you can even begin to comprehend. And the world is just waiting for you to get in gear and do what you came here to do. If I were to ask you on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you say your hope meter reads? Are you living the kind of life you have always dreamed of? Or have your hopes and dreams been replaced with thoughts like, "It's too late for me. I'm a nobody. I don't have time. I just have to accept my lot in life and keep putting one foot in front of the other." If your hope meter is running a little low, don't worry. Dale Carnegie said, "Most of the important things in the world have been accomplished by people who have kept on trying when there seemed to be no hope at all." For most of my life, I had no hope. I was born with 5 holes in my heart. I wasn't expected to live. I spent the first 2 years of my life mostly in the hospital while they got my body strong enough for me to have the surgery I needed. As a result of this, I have 4 scars. As I travel and speak to people all over, I have come to realize that scars are not unique. In fact, I love to do this. Raise your hands if you have a scar. Great. Now keep your hands raised and look around. From my view, 98% of you have scars. What does that tell us? It tells us we have a lot in common. Now there's another kind of scar that we all have in common. It's what I call life scars. So now raise your hand if you've had life happen to you. Yeah, if you've experienced a loss of a loved one, divorce, betrayal, illness, financial issues, depression, or any other life challenges, raise your hands. Now raise them high and look around. 100% of you have raised your hands. The reality is that life happens to everyone. So why is it so easy to feel all alone? Why is it so easy to think life only happens to us? After all, we saw only seconds ago, by the raise of hands, we all have scars. Life happens to all of us. My life scars started with my grandfather. He was a criminal on the run. He died leaving my mother alone on the streets in her early teens. She didn't even know what her real last name was. She was out there. She was afraid. She was cold. She was hungry. And a woman came up and offered her food and shelter in exchange for a few favors. As a result of these favors, my mom became a teenage prostitute, addicted to drugs and alcohol. A few years later, she married my father. She didn't want children. So when she had me and I was born with a heart defect, it was more than she could bear. She didn't even know how to cope. I was told that when I would cry, she would beat me over the head with a wooden spoon until I stopped. 6 years and two sisters later, and after much neglect and being exposed to all forms of abuse, my mother had enough. One day after my father left for work, she said to me, "Becky, get your sisters and I will take you girls to the zoo." This was so exciting. This was unlike her. I couldn't wait to go to the zoo and actually do something fun with my mom. However, after we arrived at the city where the zoo was, she asked if we'd rather go on an airplane ride. Yeah, I mean, things were just getting better. It was like Christmas. So we got on a big plane and we flew to another state. And when we got off the plane, a woman met us. Now, years later, I would learn that this was the same woman who had offered my mom room and board if she would do those favors for her. We went and we stayed the night with this woman. The next morning, we got in the car again and we drove for a long time. And we drove out into the middle of the California desert. We stopped at a poor, isolated community. My mother got us girls out of the car, and then pointing to some puppies, she said, "Girls, play with the puppies, and I will be back in a few hours." I wish I'd paid more attention to my mom that day instead of the puppies. I wished I'd hugged her tight and looked into her eyes one last time and said, "I love you, Mommy," and heard her say the same. My mom never came back. People often ask, "What happened next?" You know, I don't remember much, and I'm sure that is a blessing in disguise. I do know that when they found us, they said we were wearing only our underwear. We were starving, skin and bones, and covered with lice. My aunt and uncles were the ones who found us. I remember when they drove into the poor community, and everyone was wondering who these people were. The man came up to me, and he knew my name, and he kept calling me Becky, and I was looking at him strangely and confused, wondering who he was and why he seemed to know my name. And then you know how you see on TV when someone's memory comes back and all of a sudden it's like, ooh. Well, that's how I felt. This horrible flood of emotions came over me and I started screaming hysterically, "I want my mom! I want my mom! I want my mom!" We were eventually returned to our dad. I wish I could say that we lived happily ever after. However, the next 5 years of my life brought even greater challenges. I eventually ended up in a foster home. During my teens, I had no self-esteem. I was tall and gangly, uncoordinated. I had bushy eyebrows that would give Godzilla a run for his money, and I wore bottle-thick glasses. I felt like I didn't belong anywhere. I was scared. I hated life. I could not see a purpose for living. At the age of 13, I tried to take my life. One day, as I got off the bus, I noticed another bus pulling into the drop-off area, and it was going fast. The bus driver was paying attention to rowdy kids in the back. I knew all I had to do was wait for him to get close enough, and then I could just step in front of the bus and it would all be over. So that's what I did. As the bus approached, I waited for just the right moment, and just as I stepped forward, a kid grabbed me from behind and said, "Hey, what are you trying to do, kill yourself?" "Yeah, mind your own business." The next thing I know, I'm in the school counselor's office, and this was a turning point in my life. See, the counselor asked me a very profound question. One that began to change the direction of my life. She asked if I had a dream. "A dream?" I said. "Are you kidding? What good would a dream do for someone like me?" She told me to look inside and find my dream. She told me that what I was going through was tough, but it would pass. And when it did, I would have a future if I would only choose it. And she was right. Eleanor Roosevelt said the same thing. She said, The future belongs to those who believe in their dreams. That's what my counselor was telling me. The future was mine if I would only dare to dream. And that's what I'm here sharing with you. Never let go of your dreams. And if you think your dream's gone, or you don't have one, go looking for it. Shortly after this, another piece to my life puzzle happened. The youth church group I attended had a devotional. I was sitting in the audience, just sort of listening. The speaker was a really beautiful dark-haired lady, but then all of a sudden she got my attention. She was such an instrument in changing my life, and the funny thing is, I don't even remember what she said. I do remember how she made me feel. I found myself laughing and beginning to hope. I found myself wanting to live and experience the best life had to offer. And that's when it happened. I found my dream. I thought, I don't know how, but I will get through this. And then one day, I want to stand before others and offer them the same kind of hope that this lady is offering me. And when I stand before groups like you, I remember that day. Of course, my life didn't magically turn around at that moment. I was 13 then, and I didn't even start to get a clue until I was 35. I went through a lot of pain and misery and depression for years. Pain inflicted because I believed I was worthless and broken. Of course, I pretended everything was perfect, and I hid it from others well, but it didn't change how I felt inside. Do you believe in coincidences? I don't. I don't believe it's an accident that you're here listening to this message tonight. I believe everything is on purpose and that our life is like a giant puzzle and every moment is a piece of that puzzle. I also believe that it is up to us to look at our life's experiences and find out how the puzzle pieces fit together. I hope you are hearing the message. I hope you are getting that no matter how hard life is or how big the risks seem, that if you will choose to believe in your ability to live a life of greatness, you can and you will. And here is the really great news. You don't have to be perfect to be powerful. I was so happy to learn that, because I am and always will be far from perfect. So will you, and that's okay. We don't have to be perfect to be powerful. We just need to be our best selves, and we do that by believing and doing a little better every day. When I chose to run for Mrs. Utah, it was one of the hardest and scariest things I have ever done. I always pictured myself as the girl with bushy eyebrows and bottle-thick glasses. And when I first heard about pageants, I have to admit I was pretty judgmental of the type of women who would do such a thing. Even though it turned out that my competition included doctors and lawyers and even professors, these were women with big hearts and a desire to make a difference in the world. There was absolutely nothing flashy about me. I hardly wore makeup. I was sure that I would be the first one ever to wear tennis shoes with an evening gown. You should see me in heels. That is scary in itself. In fact, if you've ever seen Mrs. Congeniality, well, I snort pretty well myself. I never did and still won't go out in a swimming suit without a t-shirt or shorts on. So the swimsuit competition was worse than childbirth, if you ask me. I slipped on stage, I exited wrong, I practically ran into the next contestant. I didn't win my first pageant either, but I felt compelled to try again. And I won the second time. Every time we do hard things, we find out that we can. Every time we do something new, new doors open, new friendships are made, and new opportunities come our way. That's why it's so important to read and to listen to other people's success stories. Because when you do, you find out everyone has to overcome their own set of trials. You find out that we're all a little afraid. One of my favorite quotes is, "You're a nerd, I'm a nerd, so let's be nerds together." If I had not chosen to believe everyone has a mission and purpose, that everyone was born for greatness, including me, I would not be here tonight. That's why I love this quote. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, and talented? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. I love that quote. It's from Return to Love by Marianne Williamson. How many of you in here know who Earl Nightingale is? I see a few of you do. For those of you who don't know, Earl grew up in the Depression. Yet despite his circumstances, he became a great leader, author, and motivational speaker. And he said, "You can predict a person's future and determine his bank balance if you know two things, the books he reads and the people he associates with." I agree with Mr. Nightingale completely. In fact, in my book, Victim or Victorious, I share the victory tools I use to overcome the effects of my past. My number one victory tool is reading. If I want to keep my sanity and my motivation going, I have to listen to or read from a book every day. And because of the hecticness of my time, I'll usually have to do it while I'm driving or washing dishes. It would be nice, wouldn't it, to be able to look into our future and see what we have achieved and what our bank balance account is, right? And that's the point. We can. We can determine our future if we will take control of our life by believing in our potential for greatness and taking action. Stop and reflect for a moment on women who impact the lives of millions. Women like Oprah Winfrey and Joyce Myers, who didn't let their challenges convince them that they were worthless. Thank heavens they didn't play small. Is there anyone in here who hasn't watched the movie Sound of Music? I love that movie. I always said that if God had blessed me with a voice, I would have never spoken a word. I would have sang my way through life. That's probably why I can't carry a tune at all. He didn't want to take any chances. How many of you knew that The Sound of Music was based on a true story? And that Maria was actually a real person? She was born on a train. Her mother died when she was about 2 years old, and Maria was raised by an unaffectionate foster mother. She underwent a very strict education without any other children around. She was raised as a socialist and an atheist. Now, does that sound anything like the playful musical nun Maria we all know and love? Maria's life story has touched my heart, and her ability to choose to make music where none was found is a gift that still lives on today. What a legacy. And what's so important for all women everywhere to know, for all of you to get, is that like Maria, all of you carry within you the ability to make a difference in the lives of others. How do we overcome our past and accept our greatness? What's the difference between these women and many others? Two words, choices and actions. They chose to do what it took to change their mindset. They chose to make a difference in the lives of others and as a result discovered their greatness. We are not a product of our circumstances. We are a product of our choices. Dale Carnegie said, "Believe that you will succeed, believe it firmly, and you will then do what is necessary to bring about success." The most powerful part of this quote is the part that reads, "And you will then do what is necessary to bring about success." Success often comes after a misstep in the right direction. Yes, let me repeat that. You heard that right. Success often comes after a misstep in the right direction. It is more about movement and doing than the perfection of the action. It's the law of harvest. The more seed you plant, the better the harvest. In fact, what would happen if you went to plant a garden and you only put two or three seeds into the ground? Not very much, if anything. You have to plant the whole package, right? See, people tend to think that success is like magic, that there's just a few choice people who are blessed and all they do is walk blissfully into success, health and wealth, and live happily ever after. If there is one thing that I've learned on my journey so far, it is this. Success does not come easy. It is learned and it is earned. What it means is if I can learn it, you can learn it. And if I could earn it, you can earn it. Anyone can become successful if they're willing to do what it takes. If they're just willing to plant long enough to reap the harvest. Success is not magic. It's actually a science. I can't tell you how often people say to me, "Well, it's easy for you to be all positive. Look at you. You were Mrs. Utah. You have successful businesses. You're tall. You're thin. And you've obviously had the perfect life." I just shake my head. They say that to me because they see the results of the system and the science I want to share with you tonight. And because they have no idea what my life was like or even what I deal with every day. They just see the positive results of my system because I dared to keep dreaming and I took another chance. Before I share the system with you, I want to talk to you about one more type of scars. These are what I call entrepreneurial scars. I earned my first one in the third grade. When I was 5, I got my ears pierced at home the old-fashioned way with a big needle. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I see smirks and I see heads shaking. I asked this question once and a lady in the group raised her hand and said, Ooh, let me tell my story. She said, when I was younger, my sister got the bright idea to pierce my ears. Only she got a carrot, so when the needle went through my ear, it wouldn't stick into her finger. The problem was the needle got stuck in the carrot and wouldn't come out. So her sister panicked and pulled the carrot through her ear. Yeah, ouch. Well, my experience had gone rather well. And when I went to school, almost no one had pierced ears. So the girls would ooh and ah and tell me how they wished they could get their ears pierced. So one day, I got a bright idea. I decided to open an ear piercing business on the playground during recess. I found a beautiful black velvet Valentine chocolate box with a big red rose on top. Then I filled it with all my medical supplies. I found my cutest earrings, and I could hardly wait to go to school the next day and start lining up my customers. I would go up to the girls on the playground and show them my earrings and ask them, don't you think these are pretty? And they would say yes. And then I would ask them, wouldn't you like to wear some too? And they would say yes. And then I would say, for $2, I can make that happen. Well, at that point, my customers would turn and leave. But I was persistent, and I finally found my first customer. And she was as excited as I was. When the time came, I carefully swabbed her ear with alcohol, and then I pulled out my instrument, the needle. Only I don't know if her skin was extra tough or if the needle was dull, but just nothing was happening. And we sat there disappointed for a while. Then I rummaged through my medical kit and I found the perfect instrument, a seam ripper. Now who said angels don't do their best to help? Because try as I might, that lid would not come off the ripper. So next I went to the teacher on recess duty and asked for his help. He took the lid off, eyed it, me a little warily, and then sent me on my way. Well, I found my client on the merry-go-round. I jumped on, went over, grabbed her ear, went to make my incision, and then all of a sudden I heard, stop! And now someone had me by the ear, and I was off to the principal's office. Can you believe it? They confiscated my medical kit. They said something about lack of licensing and proper education. So I tried something less adventurous. I shaved crayons and glued the shavings on Campbell's soup cans. I thought they were so beautiful. With all the colors of the rainbow, my soup can creation should surely match any decor. Yeah, no one appreciated that either. Everybody grows up wanting to be somebody. Everybody wants to grow up and do something special, and I was no different. All my life, I yearned to be somebody and do something special. I yearned to be my own boss so I could have the money to do anything I wanted to do. So, in my early 20s, I joined up with several of the hot home party cosmetic companies. I loved what they promised. I could set my own hours. I could be my own boss, gain financial freedom, conquer the world. Only I found out, after a few weeks and a few parties, I didn't cut the mustard. I felt like a coward. I wondered why other people could make it and I couldn't. So I made all kinds of excuses. Until I discovered I had grasshopper-itis. Finding out I suffered from grasshopper-itis seemed to make all the difference. It explained why I was the way I am. Now I see a lot of confused looks out there. Grasshopper-itis can be very fatal, and yet it usually goes undiagnosed, which is tragic since up to 85% or more of our population suffers from it. It was really quite by accident that I learned about it myself. See, one day I was reading from a very old book, a very wise book, also known as the Good Book, and that's when I came across grasshopper-itis. Now, you can read about it a little bit more yourself when you go home. Just pick up a Bible and turn to Numbers chapter 13. But perhaps you are familiar already with the story. The story of a man named Moses and of the great exodus from a place called Egypt and of the children of Israel. Well, it was when the children of Israel first made it to the borders of Canaan, the land of milk and honey that God had promised them. But before they could enter, the Lord commanded Moses to send one leader from each of the 12 tribes to check out the land of Canaan. So Moses did. He sent the 12 in, and they came back and they reported that truly this was a land flowing with milk and honey, a land where the grape clusters were so big that it took two men to carry one clump of grapes on a staff that they carried between both of their shoulders. Sounds like the perfect place to move into, doesn't it? Only there was a problem. Listen to their two different reports. Two of the 12 men saw the beautiful, abundant land, and they were ready to accept the great place and the plan God had prepared for them. They believed all things were possible. Only the other 10 told a different story. They returned afraid. They came back with overwhelming negative reports, explaining why they would be crazy, even stupid, to try and enter such a land with so many giants. In fact, here is their actual report. And they told Moses, "We came into the land whither thou sent us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there." Now, I need to tell you that the children of Anak were literally giants. In fact, remember the story of David and Goliath. Well, Goliath was an Anak, and he was like 9 foot tall. Okay, back to their report. They said, "We cannot go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. For there we saw giants, and we are in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight." Wow, did you hear what they said? They said, "The city is too fortified, and the people are giants." And now here is the real kicker. They said, "We are in our own sight grasshoppers, and so we are in their sight." Here God was ready to give them everything, but because of grasshopper-itis, because they chose to see themselves as small and not trust in their mission and purpose, they had to wander in the wilderness for 40 years, and they never entered the promised land. See, when we suffer from grasshopper-itis, we see ourselves and our capabilities as small, insignificant, unable to do or have what we want. When we see ourselves as small, the world treats us as small. The world treats us as we see ourselves. Do these kinds of feelings sound familiar to you? Do you see the world around you and its challenges and opportunities as the giants? Do you see yourself as a grasshopper? Are you like the 10 who find the negative in everything, or like the 2 who believed and were ready to accept the greatness that was in store for them? Unfortunately, most people are like the 10. They're always distrusting and skeptical. And if they do stretch themselves and try a few things, as soon as they meet rejection or challenges, they blame themselves and then they find excuses to give up on their dreams. Tragically, they give up on the best life has to offer because they think something is wrong with them, or they think that life is not fair and only rewards a special few. These people, they have grasshopper-itis. In fact, when I started practicing the cure for grasshopper-itis, those who didn't want to cure their grasshopper-itis did their best to discourage me. And you know, they almost did. Thank heavens I didn't let them. And that's why I'm here tonight sharing with you the cure for grasshopper-itis. It breaks my heart to see people who want to do something special with their lives and enjoy the best that life has to offer, but they don't because they're afraid and they see themselves as small and the world and its possibilities as giants they can never conquer. Well, I know better. I hated life. I wanted to die. I didn't go to college. I thought no one could love me. I could go on, but I won't, because the point is, just because we weren't born with a silver spoon in our mouth and a healthy self-esteem doesn't mean we're not supposed to have one. We can either choose to see ourselves as small, or we can choose to learn to see our greatness and make a difference in the world. So let's talk about cures for grasshopper-itis. Let's talk about the law of harvest for a minute. Most people don't realize that what makes people successful is the right system in conjunction with the law of the harvest. The law of the harvest is planting seeds, which means taking actions every day. If you do this, you will get results. Even seemingly poor actions, if enough are planted, will bring about a harvest. And here is the secret to making the law of the harvest work. You have to plant lots more seeds than what you want or expect to grow. So you need a plan and lots of patience in the beginning. Even knowing this, most people give up after only planting a few seeds, because at some point in their life, they came to believe that if they make mistakes or fail to reach their goal after their first few attempts, that there's something wrong with them, that they don't have what it takes, or that the idea they chose was a bad one. They have accepted the myth that if they are in the right place, doing the right thing, everything should be easy and go perfect. It is false beliefs like this that set people up for real failure. What is real failure? The only real failure is when a person quits. How can you tell if you're a person who has quit? Well, quitters promise themselves that they will never get talked into believing, or hoping, or dreaming, or trying anything again. Sound familiar? I can't tell you how sad and wrong that thinking is. I know, because I thought the same way for a long time. I suffered from grasshopper-itis. I used to think mistakes meant permanent failure, and that something was wrong with me. I have quit and whined and come up with more excuses than I would care to share. But that all changed for me when I discovered a system and a cure for grasshopperitis. And I'm going to share that system with you now. This system is proven, and if you do it, you can't fail. This system can be used to improve your health, your relationships, your job, and even help you build your own home-based business. This system, with the help of God, helped me, a nobody from nowhere, with no hope and no confidence, become a paid motivational speaker, a published author, win the title of Mrs. Utah. This system has helped hundreds of individuals change their lives, like Hope, a single mom who was working 3 jobs, barely making ends meet, who now works from home and makes more than she ever thought possible. I am sharing this system with you free because I believe you can't help someone else to the top of the mountain without getting there yourself. This system is what I call the 4A system. I call it the 4A system because it's made up of 4A words. These are the 4A words. Actions, accumulate, accelerate, and accomplish great things. This is how it works. Pick your goal. Write it down. Then write down what specific actions have to be taken to make your goal happen. Then commit to carry out a minimum of 2 of those actions every day. Let's say your goal was to improve a relationship with one of your children. One daily action could be, I will write a little complimentary or loving note on a post-it and put it on my child's bathroom mirror so that every morning he or she will see it. Action 2 might be, every day I will go out of my way to ask how things are going at their school or work, and then I will just listen. Parents who have done 2 simple, consistent, specific daily actions share things like, I never thought I could repair my relationship with my daughter. Now we are best friends. Or I thought I'd lost my child for good and now we're closer than ever. These are the kinds of results we can get when we start using the 4A system. Why does something this simple work? Good question. This system works because of the law of the harvest. Every day when you carry out 2 specific actions, you are actually planting seeds. The first day 2, the second day 2 more, the third day 2 more, and so on. And just like in math, the more numbers you add, the bigger your total is in the end. The more you plant, the greater your harvest. So day by day, your specific actions begin to add up, to accumulate, bringing us to the second A, the power of numbers. Then your actions begin to accelerate, the third A. Here's where your momentum begins to build. It's the snowball theory working for you. And then before you know it, your 2 specific daily actions have accumulated and accelerated. And now the final A, you have accomplished great things. It's a simple, powerful, no-fail system. It's not new. It's a science, as old as the universe. It's the law of the harvest. You plant, and after a season, you reap. So, if that's all there is to it, how come more people are not planting their daily A's? Most people plan on planting. The problem is, people are human, and humans have fickle feelings. So one moment we get all excited and we promise we will do whatever it takes. Then we go to sleep and wake up only to find that in the middle of the night we lost all of our gumption. Can you relate? Would you like to get your gumption back? Would you like to achieve your goals? You can, you know. You can get your gumption back if you will just learn to accept that your feelings are fickle and then choose to ignore them. When we do this, we overcome grasshopperitis. If you want to start using the 4A system in your life, set your goal, pick your actions, ignore your fickle feelings, and do what you committed to do. And then when you wake up and you feel afraid, discouraged, tired, not good enough, crazy for even thinking it's possible in the first place, or whatever your fickle feelings may be, say, okay, fickle feelings, I'm not trusting you today. I am trusting in the law of the harvest. I'm going to carry out my 2 actions regardless of how you make me feel. The more you ignore your feelings, the less power they will have over you, and the easier it will become to carry out your specific daily actions. If you do this long enough, planting more seeds every day, your actions will accumulate and then accelerate and accomplish your goals. I would love for you to try to prove my system wrong, because you can't. You can't do consistent, specific daily actions and not succeed. Are you ready to shake off grasshopperitis? Are you ready to take control of your life? Are you ready to accept your greatness? If you are, then start putting my 4A system to work for you today. You can take your first life-changing action by sharing this grasshopperitis CD with someone today. Every action, no matter how large or small, takes you closer to your dreams. So stand up, shake off your grasshopperitis, and step into your greatness. Well, I have so much more to share with you, but our time is up. So I thank you. It's been a pleasure.
If you would like to learn more about Becca or hear more from Becca, visit BeccaLevi.com. You are also invited to read and comment daily on her Living Life on Purpose blog, also found at BeccaLevi.com. Enjoy Becca daily at BeccaLevi.com. That's BeccaLevi.com.